Hey, it's Myron Metcalf. I know you're used to hearing me join the show to explain what's happening in the world of college basketball or hosting every Sunday morning on ESPN Radio, or maybe even reading my words about everything Minneapolis and the Star Tribune. But you are going to be hearing different voices hosting ESPN Daily in the coming weeks, and I'm lucky enough to be one of them. I'll be with you the rest of the week, helping this podcast do what it's always done. Tell the best sports stories in audio, day in and day out. Thanks for listening. Chris Herring, my guy, you are the author of the book Blood in the Garden, the flagrant history of the 1990s New York Knicks. Anybody who lived through that era remembers how important they were for the NBA. And a big part of your book is the intense rivalry between the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat, two teams that are currently squaring off in the second round of the NBA playoffs. How would you describe this Knicks-Heat rivalry over the last several decades?
Well, it's been pretty dormant. The fan bases, the teams still dislike each other, but it takes on a new level when both teams are really great or when they're competing at this point in the postseason. And I think that's what you have now. And I think that makes it more fun. There was a time, though, before this and, you know, kind of leading up to this dormant stage that was just fiery. So many people think of NBA rivalries, and you think about the Pistons and the Bulls and the Lakers and the Celtics and the matchups that decided championships every year, one way or the other, a team that had to get through another team. The Heat and the Knicks didn't necessarily have that element in the 90s, but I really think you would have been hard-pressed to find any two teams that disliked each other more for a longer amount of time in the 90s than the Knicks and the Heat.
And now we're going to flat out play the feud. With Tim Hardaway at the line, watch P.J. Brown and Charlie Ward. P.J. later on said that he thought Ward was going for his knees, so why not throw him on the floor on top of photographers?
It's one thing to say teams don't like each other. These teams hated each other.
Look at this. Alonzo trying to connect through about a dozen punches, could not connect with Larry Johnson. Other players on the court would get involved. It is so bizarre when the Heat and the Knicks get together. Strange things happen.
It was just a situation where the teams were so alike. The leader of those 90s Knicks teams and Pat Riley had abandoned them to go to the Heat, who had really no history at that point. There was no way these teams were going to like each other. And then you add in the fact that they were meeting each other in the playoffs every single year for 4 years in a row. Every one of those series went the distance. Most of them were broken up by suspensions and fights and people dragging on to other people's legs.
And there's Jeff Van Gundy grabbing the leg of Alonzo Mourning like a dog in heat.
It was just a wild time, man.
Well, you've dug deep into that wild time in writing your book, and you've unearthed all of the animosity between these two franchises, who are now fighting for a chance to play in the Eastern Conference Finals. So what does this rivalry from the 90s mean for these two teams today?
In light of all the history that exists there, you know, it's been such a long time since the two teams were really both good at the same time. And so obviously there's a hope that to some extent that there can be a revival, maybe not as bloody as it was back in the 90s, but a revival nonetheless.
The NBA has been built on rivalries. Lakers Celtics, Pistons Bulls, and more recently, the Cavs and the Warriors. But there's one rivalry that had all of that passion and fury, but didn't lead to championships and rings. But it changed the game nonetheless. So today, with Game 2 of Knicks Heat set to tip tonight, Chris Herring, author of Blood in the Garden, the flagrant history of the 1990s New York Knicks, tells us how New York and Miami are bringing the 90s back into the NBA playoffs today. I'm Myron Metcalf. It's Tuesday, May 2nd, and this is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Chris, I gotta admit, man, I'm jealous of you. You write this incredible book about the 1990s New York Knicks, and you were there at game one. You didn't get a chance to watch it on TV, but they spent 5 minutes just showing all the celebrities who had made an appearance at Madison Square Garden. The Heat take game one on the road, 108-101. What was the atmosphere like given the history of those two teams?
Yeah, I mean, it's always pretty great because, especially lately, it's been so rare for the Knicks to be here. In the second round, it's been, you know, a full 10 years since we've seen that. And so John Starks was there for the first round, and he was back there on Sunday. It was so great to see Patrick Ewing back in the building too. You know, probably what was a rough year for him with everything at Georgetown, but for him to really be honored the way that he was on Sunday, to get the applause that he did. And Alonzo Mourning was there.
There was one of the centerpieces, the epicenter of the rivalry, Patrick Ewing, and of course his former collegiate buddy, Alonzo Mourning, Pat Riley, the Heat's president and the godfather of the franchise.
These were the faces of that rivalry. So it made me really happy to see some of those faces in the crowd. I was there for the Cavs series in round one too, and that was loud, but there's something about the energy of it being a rival, if you want to call it a one-time rival at one point or what have you. That energy is different because it's a little bit nastier.
Pulls up, drew the foul on the play. Every shot, every dribble, every movement being contested right now, Doris,
no doubt.
In the half court.
No doubt.
And it feels like the 90s again, doesn't it?
And the score starting to reflect the 90s. Real frustration here is the Knicks fans.
We were sitting there in the media section at the end of the game, and it was pretty ugly at one point. Just the security guards yelling up at one of the men because he just kept using such, not just foul language, but it felt visceral. And I think that's kind of the way rivalries feel, is where people just kind of lose sight of when they're over the edge, even the fans. And so it felt different.
Before we continue talking about this series, let's hop in a time machine and revisit the past, because the origin of the Knicks-Heat rivalry begins with one man and one man only, and that is Miami Heat team president Pat Riley. What was Pat Riley's role with the Knicks back in the 1990s?
He was their coach, but that feels like it's selling him short. I mean, this was a guy that fundamentally changed the culture. When he was brought in 1991, Pat Riley really shifted the paradigm for this team. This was a team that had not really been the most organized, had underachieved at times during the 1980s. And Patrick Ewing wanted to leave the Knicks at one point, was trying to make use of an opt-out clause. That's kind of how bad things were. He'd had, I think, four or five, maybe even six coaches in the 5 or 6 years that he'd been there. So Pat Riley gets there and he shifts all of it. He turns the team around because he has them on a completely different training program, one that would not really be smiled upon, you know, in the 2000s, the 2020s or anything like that. Just a group of tough guys that he took pretty quickly into a Pistons bad boys style team.
Starks, long jumper, no good at the horn. And look at this.
Now Rivers is coming right after Kevin Johnson. He went after with his fist. Now Ainge is down. We got a brawl right in front of his guard.
Boy, this is getting ugly right now.
It gave teams that they were playing against almost a fear of what exactly the Knicks were going to do, if they were going to take things too far physically, if they were going to take things too far physically on purpose to try to put the opponent on edge, to try to put referees on edge. It was by design, and he really did change the culture and helped get them to an NBA Finals in 1994 that they came within really inches of maybe winning in Game 6.
Rockets do not want to foul. Starks for three, came up short. The game is over, and it will go to a 7th.
Tyson game.
Obviously, the game seven did not go their way. And eventually, I think Pat Riley's nature just wore on the team. He grew power hungry. And I think that kind of opened the door to this rivalry, quite frankly.
Chris, the Knicks were perennial title contenders in the 1990s. But they didn't get the thing that everybody coveted in the NBA. And that was a championship. How did Pat Riley's tenure with the Knicks ultimately come to an end?
Well, I think in a nutshell, he described this himself, and he said there comes a point where you keep getting close and you're right on the cusp, but when you keep getting turned back right at the top of the mountain, it takes something out of you.
You have to go through a process of pain, and you have to realize just, you know, you got to want something so much that it hurts. And this hurt us this year because everybody, they got behind the passion of this team. They watched the team really give everything they had to give, and they came up short.
When you sell them on the idea of outworking opponents and you have a 12:01 training camp start time, you know, right after midnight, the first allowable day of training camp, to set a tone that you want to be the first team on the court and the last team to leave it to win the championship and hoist the trophy, that starts to wear thin on your players from a messaging standpoint when they don't actually accomplish the goal. It just seemed like everybody was kind of in a funk. The team was kind of worn down physically. At that point, the money was starting to change the NBA, and Pat Riley felt like players weren't as coachable and was venting about that. And quite frankly, Pat Riley, looking around at the money that the players were beginning to make, realized, hell, I'm the best coach in this league. I'm the highest paid coach in this league as well. But I feel like I deserve a little bit more than that. And at one point, between the changing pay scale of everything and the fact that the Knicks were going through constant ownership changes, he said that he wanted an ownership stake to feel more at ease with the fact that so much stuff around him was changing. So he asked for an ownership stake. The Knicks essentially said no. But Pat Riley had a friend, a guy named Dick Butera, a wealthy real estate developer, who had been in the discussion to potentially take ownership of the Heat. His close friend ended up not getting it, but his close friend had a direct line to Mickey Arison, who did end up getting it. And during that season, right after the All-Star break in the 94-95 season, Pat Riley and the Knicks had a game in Miami. And during that visit that they had to Miami, that trip that they had to Miami, Mickey Arison had heard from Pat Riley's friend that Pat might be interested in hearing him out on an overture to come coach the Heat, even though Pat had 1 year left on his deal with the Knicks. And when these conversations were starting to happen, the Knicks were still in the midst of a playoff run. And they ended up losing that year in heartbreaking fashion. Patrick Ewing has the layup that just kind of bounces off the back iron.
Inbounds to Ewing, down to three, down to two, Ewing, not over the hip, and it's all over. The Indiana Pacers have defeated the New York Knicks.
They lose in a brutal game seven. That was the one where Reggie had the 8 points in 9 seconds. It's just a bitter ending. The Knicks still felt like they had an opportunity to get Pat to sign a contract extension that they'd offered him without an ownership stake. But the reality was Pat was somewhat down the road already with the Heat.
I planted my feet on a philosophical, positional, financial, whatever it is, on a principle. And when you come to an impasse, you got to make a decision as a person. I mean, you either leave or you go on and be embittered because you've accepted something you didn't want. And I wasn't going to do that.
He resigned from the Knicks, and he did it via fax machine. He wanted out of that contract, but the Knicks still had him under contract. He wasn't allowed to sign with the Heat officially. And so the Knicks brought tampering charges, ultimately, you know, ended up getting a first-round pick out of Miami, and I think $4 million or something like that. But I think you could look at what Miami has accomplished since then and say that obviously for them, for Mickey Arison, who had a team that had not accomplished anything prior to Pat's arrival, that it was all worth it from where they sat. It's a very small price to pay in the long run.
After Riley's departure, what were the subsequent years like when the Knicks and the Heat would square off?
Boy, the teams did not like each other. And again, that's putting it mildly. You know, 1997, a year that the Knicks feel like they've got a really, really good chance to maybe win the whole thing. They are up 3-1. But in the closing moments of game five, Pat Riley is basically challenging the Heat's manhood. He says, are you really going to let these guys punk you? Like, are you really going to let that happen? You've got to show some fight. And he just kept using the word fight repeatedly. And what Ike Austin from those Heat teams told me is that he remembered seeing this fire kind of go off in PJ Brown's eyes. And so then you get to game five and Charlie Ward has a relatively low block out. He kind of goes into the legs of PJ Brown trying to go box out for a rebound. And PJ Brown picks him up and basically suplexes him.
PJ Brown throws Charlie Ward. Watch out. This one's going to get really ugly. PJ Brown picked Charlie Ward up and threw him into the photographer's row.
And the Knicks players come pouring off the bench to kind of have Charlie Ward's back. But in doing that, because they left the bench, a bunch of them get suspended, including Patrick Ewing, and it completely shifts the tenor of that series. The Heat come back from a 3-1 deficit to win that series because of it. You look at the next year. Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning didn't like each other. They had beef from the Charlotte years. Those two get into fisticuffs.
And fists are flying at the other end. Larry Johnson is one of them.
Here we go.
Oakley and Mourning have at each other.
Jeff Van Gundy, he goes out to try to stop this from really escalating any further as Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning are swinging at each other. And Jeff Van Gundy grabs onto the leg of Alonzo Mourning and is kind of dragged basically at that point.
And there's Jeff Van Gundy grabbing the leg of Alonzo Mourning like a dog in heat. You see Van Gundy on the floor. It's amazing he came out of this mess alive.
And that's before you even get to what happened in 1999. Where the Knicks barely make it into the playoffs as an 8th seed. And guess who they have to play? They've got to play the Miami Heat, the team that they hate most. They go in and they win a deciding game five on the road because of an Allen Houston floater.
Ewing, Allen Houston. Houston ducks under. Got it! With 8 points left!
And they become the first 8th seed eventually to ever make an NBA Finals. So there was just so much history those first 3 years. They went another 7 games the next year. I know Knicks fans feel deep down they would have won 4 straight series against the Heat had it not been for the suspensions in 97. But either way, every one of these went down to the final play, basically, because these teams were just so evenly matched. They were mirror images of each other. It was a sibling rivalry. They truly hated each other, and they had good reason to.
Obviously, the NBA, Chris, is built on rivalries. We've had Celtics, Lakers, and Bulls and Pistons. More recently, the Cavs and the Warriors. When you think about the entire history of the NBA, however, what is the significance of the Heat-Knicks rivalry?
What I learned in reporting my book and talking to so many people from the league and the Knicks and everywhere else is that the Knicks kind of flew too close to the sun in some ways from the standpoint of the league had decided we don't want teams to load up on physical guys. And for physicality and bully-style basketball to overshadow the idea of skill and athleticism in the league. We should want for teams to load up on skill and athleticism. That will help the league progress. It shifted the game to a game that was based on more shooting ability and kind of a more European free-flowing style of basketball to what you see now of open space and having to really spread the floor with a lot of shooters because it makes it more difficult on defenses. I think that's the significance, is that now if you were to look at those Heat-Knicks games, it was like a prehistoric style of basketball that if we still had that style of play, we wouldn't have what we look at as so beautiful now. We wouldn't be able to praise Steph Curry getting these 50-point games and the sort of ballet-style basketball we have now, which is just so skilled. It was a different time back then, and the game looks completely different because the league wanted to get away from encouraging teams to build rosters and build styles like the Knicks and the Heat did during those years.
Coming up, what to expect from the rest of this year's Knicks Heat playoff series.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Chris, I want to return to the present day. I'm convinced Pat Riley has a fountain of youth, like an actual fountain of youth. He is 78 years old. He still works out, and he is still the team president of the Miami Heat, the position he has held since 1995. Pat Riley was at Madison Square Garden for Miami's victory in game one. How did Knicks fans react to his presence at Madison Square Garden?
I can be honest on this one. I was there, and they had the fan cam and the celeb cam going. They did not show him. I wonder to some extent if that's out of respect. As you said, he's 78 years old. I don't think they were trying to antagonize anything. There's a video, and I encourage anybody to look it up on YouTube, where Pat makes his first return to the Garden in 1995. I can't think of, with the exception of maybe LeBron going back to Cleveland for the first time, I can't think of a more hostile environment and kind of just like spectacle really in like modern NBA history than that situation where Pat goes back to the Garden.
Here comes Pat Riley, who last appeared at this Madison Square Garden court May 21st of last season.
He comes in and the crowd immediately is booing. There's signs everywhere. Pat the Rat, Benedict Riley, you name it. He knew it was coming.
Well, now here comes the chant from the crowd here at Madison Square Garden. I'm certain we'll hear some of this right throughout.
I've got an anecdote in my book that at one point he has a scratchy throat and is reaching for a lozenge. But before he does it, and you remember the days where the media basically sat courtside at the scores table, he's getting ready to take a lozenge, but then he asks one of the reporters, you think that they're poison? And I think that that tells you like kind of how far removed we are from the high point of the rivalry, where Knicks fans just hated him. And obviously it would be different now because he was a coach then. But it would be really cool if the rivalry gets back to kind of that high point.
Chris, Heat fans are happy. Playoff Jimmy is real. After torching my Milwaukee Bucks, goes out, has an excellent game again in game one against the Knicks. He's clearly the catalyst for this Heat team. But he turned his ankle in the fourth quarter, and he was hobbling for the remainder of the game. Even told reporters he was sort of a decoy down the stretch. How significant is Jimmy Butler's health for this Heat team?
I mean, it's massive. Frankly, look at Sunday's game. When he can't handle the ball and be the clutch scorer and clutch playmaker that he is in fourth quarters normally, you've got 36, 37-year-old Kyle Lowry doing that instead. You go from an all-NBA talent to a guy that is not only past his prime, but as recently as this time last year, Pat Riley calling out Kyle Lowry for really not being in shape or not really cutting it. Keep in mind, this is also a team that lost Tyler Hero at the very beginning of the playoffs. And so they don't even have their second scorer. Jimmy Butler's health is massive. And, you know, seeing how he comes out of this ankle injury and whether he can even go in game two is massive for this team.
What's fascinating about Jimmy Butler's performance is they're not running a bunch of intricate sets for him. This feels like an AAU basketball coach telling his best player to go out and get buckets. And I'm curious, what elements of Jimmy Butler's efforts so far kind of remind you of the basketball we saw in the 90s?
I mean, I don't know that there's really anybody who, when we think about what he brings to the table, the teams he's played with, everything about Butler kind of reminds you of 90s style play. He is a highly physical player. He takes pride in playing both sides of the ball. He's not a great, great shooter. And I mean, is someone that just wrote a book about the 90s Knicks. I mean, I wrote about a lot of that. So he fits from that perspective. He's someone that prioritizes getting to the basket and prioritizes getting to the free throw line. He's someone that likes to trash talk. He's someone that, you know, he just would have fit during that era. And you watch him play and you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's a grit to his game that I think he's proud of. He does not have a finesse game at all, really, compared to so much of what we talk about when we think of Steph, when we think of the guys that just, you know, that make it look poetic a lot of the time. Jimmy's not that. But there's a beauty to his game too, just in the fact that he gets it done. He's going to be dependable. Just like we saw in game one, even if the guy can't really walk, he's going to find a way to play the last 5 minutes, even if it's as a decoy.
Chris, the Knicks have their own health issues. Julius Randle, their all-star, missed game one with an ankle injury. How much was his absence felt in game one?
He's big to not have him in this series. This is a guy that averaged close to 30 points a game against the Heat in the regular season. But I think even more so than that, I think it's more about the style of play that this Knicks team really thrived with for so much of the year. They were a really ISO-heavy team. Him and Jalen Brunson go one-on-one a lot. That is fundamentally what playoff offenses are kind of built around for the most part. Part of why Butler's absence is so big too, or if he's not healthy, why that's so important for the Heat. But this is a team that, you know, is going to see defense is certainly Miami's load up on Jalen Brunson, load up on RJ Barrett if Randle's not there. And I think what you saw specifically in game one is the idea of the Knicks trying to kick the ball out to open shooters, but the Heat kind of daring the Knicks to make those shots. And it didn't play out well. This is a team that made 7 threes on the whole afternoon. And the Knicks have gone 1-7 in games, regular season and playoffs, when they make 7 threes or fewer. And so can they win without Randle? It's possible, certainly, if Jimmy Butler is not fully himself or not able to play either. But it's much tougher, and you're kind of asking more guys to lend help as opposed to a guy like Randle that can just kind of go get it himself.
Okay, Chris, game two is at Madison Square Garden tonight. You'll be there in the flesh. And once again, I'm jealous, man. And this feels like a must-win for the Knicks here. So with that as the background, what are you hoping to see tonight and in the rest of this series?
Honestly, I'm grateful to just kind of be watching two teams that are relatively evenly matched. I don't think anybody's looking at these two teams and necessarily saying these are the favorites. It kind of feels like old times because of that. These two teams were never favorites in the 90s either, really. Maybe one time the Heat were. You've got a team that, you know, as of this week, will have been 50 years since the last time they won a championship. And a Heat team that is trying to break through. Think about how close they got, you know, during the bubble with the Jimmy Butler team, how close they were last year to making it back to the finals. I imagine that this is what Pat Riley wants. I don't know that he wants to do this forever, but if he could get one more, maybe that would be enough for him to ride off into the sunset. You know, this is the way it was always meant to be, I feel like, between these teams. I think fans of the teams would tell you it's always supposed to end with them getting titles or being closer to winning titles. But after a long layoff from this rivalry, this just feels right to see these teams back at it again.
Well, Chris Herring, as always, thank you.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk with you guys always.
I'm Myron Metcalf. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.